So tonight, we are very honored to have David Reinick with us. He is the abbot of the Boundless Way Temple in Worcester. He is one of the four guiding teachers of the Boundless Way School of Zen. And even though this is not a stop on his international book tour, I just want to say that this year David has published a lovely book called This Truth Never Fails. It's a book of many short chapters, each of which touches something very important about Zen, about being human. And each of the chapters stands on its own, but they also weave together to form the arc of a whole year of life. So, highly recommended. But tonight, we get to hear a Dharma talk from David. Thank you.
So, always wonderful to be here. And to sit together, to come together at the temple. These past 5 days, we've been having a sesshin. Some of you were there in body, all of us there in spirit in some way. But it's the tradition of Zen communities to have a special retreat around December 8th, which is the date that the Buddha's enlightenment, his awakening, is celebrated. And this tradition of stepping back from our lives is the practice of Zen that we enact here. So coming here this evening, each one of us in the middle of our life. So many things have happened up until this point. And none of us know what will come next. And like the Buddha, the historical Buddha who lived 2,600 years ago, each one of us is looking for something. Each one of us has been called on this journey. In Zen, we call the journey waking up. But this waking up in Zen is not something special. What we wake up to is what is already here. This evening we recited a piece from Hongzhi's writings called Cultivating the Empty Field. It said the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. So this field of boundless emptiness is a word or an idea that is actually new in the Mahayana tradition. In the Buddha's original sutras, he talked about everything changing. He talked about impermanence. But this idea of emptiness, of shunyata, is one of the ideas that puzzled Westerners when they first encountered Buddhism. My dad is a Presbyterian minister, and when I first got involved in Zen, he was a little concerned because he said Buddhism is a very negative religion. And I think as it was originally understood, this idea of emptiness can be interpreted as nothingness. And so this translation of boundless emptiness, boundless potential, boundless fullness might be a better description. This saying that this field of boundless emptiness reminds me of Carl Jung, who said life is a brilliant illumination between two great mysteries. So our life is a brilliant illumination between two great mysteries. Of course, the great mysteries are where did we come from and where are we going? I vividly remember 26 years ago when my daughter was born and we brought her home from the hospital and set her down on the floor in her little rocking thing. And I just looked at her and first of all, I said, you know, I had no idea what we're supposed to do with her. You know, now we got her home, how do you play with her? But we figured that out. It was such a deep mystery. Where did she come from? I mean, I know in one way, but I mean in a deeper way. Where do we come from? We all find ourselves here this evening, and we could all tell our stories. Well, I was born here, and I encountered this, and this, and that. But our stories aren't really true. Not in any sense of certainty. We make up our past, and we make up our future, and all of it happening here, all of it blossoming, each one of us flashing into being. And we talk a lot about not knowing, about the mystery. Being here in this Episcopalian church, I'm reminded I have many good friends and colleagues who are leaders in the Episcopalian church. And one of the things I appreciate about Episcopalians in particular is a great honoring of mystery. It seems to me if we think we know what's really going on, we're missing the truth of the matter. All of us have lungs and hearts and bellies. All of us put food in our mouth and chew it and swallow it. And we have no idea how we are nourished by our own food. If we had to do the work of our stomach, of our intestine, if we were in charge of that, we would starve to death. There is some brilliant wisdom in our body. We breathe in the air, but we have no idea. If you had to take the oxygen out of the air and put it in the right place in the red blood cells and send it to the right place in your body, nothing would happen. So there is this aliveness that we find. We can see, we can hear, we encounter this world. And this idea of this emptiness, we say in Buddhism, dependent co-arising, that the self and the world create each other. Traditionally, we might think as human beings, we were born onto the stage of the world, and then we exit the stage and the play goes on. But experientially, when we're born, our whole world is born, the whole universe. And as we sit, the whole universe sits with us. And Zen addresses the very human issue that we all live lives that are busy, and we are all constantly thinking about what's next and how do we shape our life, how do we, what do we do for work, who do we spend our time with. And it's actually quite challenging for human beings to break out of the trance of everyday life, to touch something more. And that comes back to this yearning. Each one of us in our hearts has tasted something more than just day-to-day, something more than just what have you accomplished or what can you accomplish. Are looking for that. And Hunger goes on to say, you must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. So you must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away. I was quite taken with this when I first heard it, because often in the Zen stories you hear about some teacher saying some slightly bizarre thing, and then the student experiences some great awakening. We think, wow, you know, that's what I want. If I listen to enough weird Zen talks, someday something will happen and the light will go off, and then forever after I will be awakened. And it's one of the things that that you give up if you sit for 25 minutes or if you sit for 5 days, because what you encounter is not some kind of romance or some kind of ideal life, but you encounter your life. I encounter my life. And we're all sure that's wrong. Right? Well, this couldn't be right. You know, tell me, you know, what is it? I want the real Zen thing. I don't want my life. Well, the great teaching of Zen is your life is it. And, of course, this makes no sense to the rational mind. It's clear that there's something I'm missing. I should be calmer. I shouldn't have these wild emotional swings I have. I should be more centered. And so this purify, cure, grind down, or brush away. This is the gradual unfolding of our Zazen. There are moments, all of us have had them. There are moments in human life where things open up. And it may be in your Zen practice, there are moments that this has happened. And it may be just in your life, those mornings, maybe sipping your tea and reading the paper and the sunlight coming in the window. Or listening to a piece of music and suddenly you hear, you really hear the music, and you're touched, huh, in that moment. So there are those moments of awakening, of opening, where suddenly the contracted self is given the gift of, but there is also in Zen, and one of the great gifts of Zen is saying that if you want to grow in love and understanding, if you want to move toward the center of your own life, there is a very simple way to do it, to sit still and bring your attention to the sensation of your breath. To sit still and be present with your life as it is. I don't know why this works. It is a great mystery to me that this ancient tradition of stillness, of this Zazen practice where we put our faith in our posture and our breath. We bring ourselves to this moment and we begin to see what the mind does. We begin to become intimate with the suchness of our life, which for all of us is quite wild and weird. I no longer believe in normal people, for I've never met one. All of us harbor these wild fantasies about ourselves and about other people. And not bad, but to meet ourself in both the plus and the minus. Part of our vow as we sit down in our stillness is to be present with ourself in all of our weird and wonderful guises. There is a teaching of that's sometimes called no self, but actually it's no fixed self. We have many selves, teacher, student, friend, exercise, you know, whatever in the moment the self appears. And so as we sit, sometimes we feel spaciousness and ease. Sometimes there is some quieting. Other times our mind is on fire. We can barely stay awake. Our knees hurt. All kinds of weather conditions we encounter. But as we commit to being present, as we commit to this practice in whatever degree, maybe just once in a while, maybe every day, that there is something that happens to us with this intention to be present, that we don't know how to do it. Now, me, after many, many years, I still don't know how to do it. Every time I sit down, I wonder who I will encounter. I wonder how will I do it. But as we sit, our practice teaches us. Our life unfolds us. You cannot do this. But through this practice, through something that happens when we come together in this silence, through meeting one-on-one with a teacher, through listening to talks, through sitting on your own, we can move closer to that which we love, this touching the heart-mind. We can grow in intimacy with our own life. So this is our work together, and my gratitude to each one of you for coming this evening, for your commitment to your life, your commitment to getting to the bottom of this. Of course, impossible to get to the bottom of it. There is no no bottom, no sides, no edges. But a wonderful thing to do together.